Chapter 51. News comes to Kyrian. A thin thread of blue smoke rising from the plane, short-stemmed pipe clenched in his teeth, Rand rested one hand on the balcony's stone railing and looked into the garden below. Sharp shadows were lengthening. The sun was a red ball falling through a cloudless sky. 10 days in Kyrian, and this seemed the first moment he had stood still when he was not asleep. Solanda stood close by his side, pale face tilted up to watch him, not the garden. Her hair was not so elaborately done as that of a woman of higher rank, but it still added half a foot to her height. He tried to ignore her, but it was difficult to ignore a woman who insisted on pressing her firm bosom against your arm. The meeting had gone on long enough for him to want a moment's break. He had known it for a mistake as soon as Solanda followed him out.
"I know a secluded pool," she said softly, "where this heat might be escaped. A sheltered pool where nothing would disturb us."
The music of Osmodian's harp drifted through the square arches behind them. Something light, cool sounding. Rand puffed a little more vigorously. The heat. Nothing compared to the waste, but autumn should be coming on, yet the afternoon felt like the depths of summer. A rainless summer. Shirt-sleeved men in the garden were spreading water from buckets, doing it late to avoid evaporation, but too much was brown or dying. The weather could not be natural. The burning sun mocked him. Moraine agreed, and Osmodian, but neither knew what to do or how, any more than he did. Samael. Samael he could do something about.
"Cool water," Solanda murmured, "and you and I alone."
She snuggled closer, though he did not see how it was possible. He wondered when the next taunt would come. No dashing off in a temper, whatever Samael did. Once his methodical build-up in Tyr was done, then he would loose the lightning. One crushing stroke to put an end to Samael, and add Ilion to his bag at the same time. With Ilion, Tyr, and Kyrian, plus an army of Aiel big enough to overwhelm any nation in weeks, he...
"Would you not like to swim? I do not swim well myself, but surely you will teach me."
Rand sighed. For a moment he wished Avienda was there. No, the last thing he wanted was a bruised Solanda running screaming with her clothes half torn off. Hooding his eyes, he looked down at her and spoke quietly around his pipe. "I can channel." She blinked, drawing back without moving a muscle. They never understood why he would bring that up. For them it was something to be glossed over, ignored if possible.
"They say I'll go mad, but I'm not mad yet. Not yet."
He chuckled from deep in his chest, then cut it off abruptly, made his face blank.
"Teach you to swim.
I'll hold you up in the water with the power. Saidin is tainted, you know, the Dark One's touch. You won't feel it, though. All around you, but you'll not feel a thing." Another chuckle, with a hint of a wheeze. Her dark eyes were as wide and round as they would go, her smile a sickly rictus.
"Later, then. I want to be alone. To think about..."
He bent as if to kiss her, and with a squeak she dropped a curtsy so sudden that at first he thought her legs had collapsed. Backing away, curtsying hurriedly at every other step, she babbled about the honor of serving him, her deepest wish to serve him, all in a voice on the brink of hysteria, until she bumped into one of the square arches. A final half-bend of her knees, and she darted inside. With a grimace, he turned back to the railing. Frightening women. She would have made excuses had he asked her to leave, would have taken a command as only a temporary setback, unless it was to stay out of his sight. And even then, maybe word would spread this time. He had to keep a short rein on his temper. It ran away too easily of late. It was the drought he could do nothing about, the problems that sprang up like weeds wherever he looked. A few moments more alone with his pipe. Who would rule a nation when he could have easier work, such as carrying water uphill in a sieve? Across the garden, between two of the royal palace's stepped towers, he had a view of Kyrian, harshly lit and shadowed, mastering the hills more than flowing over them. His crimson flag, with the ancient Aes Sedai symbol, hung limply above one of those two towers, a long copy of the dragon banner over the other. That one flew a dozen places in the city, including the tallest of the great unfinished towers, right in front of him. Shouting had done as little as orders there. Neither Tyrans nor Kyrianen could believe he really meant that he only wanted one, and Aiel did not care about banners one way or another. Even now, deep inside the palace, he could hear the murmur of a city jammed to bursting. Refugees from every corner of the land, more afraid to return to their homes than they were to have the dragon reborn in their midst. Merchants seeping in, selling whatever people could afford to buy, and buying whatever people could not afford to keep. Lords and armed men rallying to his banner, or to someone's. Hunters for the horn, thinking it must be found near him. A dozen forgaters, or 100, were ready to sell it to any of them. Ogier stonemasons down from Steading Tsofu to see if there was work for their fabled skills. Adventurers, some of whom might have been bandits a week ago, come to see what they could pick up. There had even been 100 or so white cloaks, though they had galloped out as soon as it was clear the siege had been lifted. Did Pedron Niles' ingathering of the white cloaks concern him? Egwene gave him hints of things, but she saw matters from the White Tower, wherever she stood. The Aes Sedai point of view was not his. At least the wagon trains full of grain were beginning to arrive from Tyr with some regularity. Hungry people could riot. He wished he could have simply left it at being glad they were not so hungry anymore. But there it was. The bandits were fewer, and the civil war had not resumed. Yet. More good news. He had to make certain it stayed that way before he could leave. 100 things to take care of before he could go after Samael. Only Ruark and Bael remained of the chiefs he really trusted, those who had marched from Roedion with him. But if the 4 clans who had joined him late could not be trusted on the march to Tyr, could he trust them loose in Kyrian? Indirian and the others had acknowledged him as Karakarn, but they knew him as little as he knew them. The message that morning might be a problem. Berelain, first of Mayenne, was only a few 100 miles south of the city, on her way to join him with a small army. He had no idea how she had led it across Tyr. Oddly, her letter had asked if Perrin was with him. No doubt she feared Rand might forget her small country if she did not remind him. It might almost be a pleasure to watch her spar with the Kyrianen, the latest in a long line of firsts who had managed to keep Tyr from swallowing their country by playing the game of houses. Perhaps if he put her in charge here, he would be taking Mylan and the other Tyrans with him when the time came, if it ever came. This was no better than what was waiting inside. Tapping the dottle from his pipe, he ground out the tabak's last sparks under his boot. No need to risk fire to the garden. It would go up like a torch. The drought. The unnatural weather. He realized he was snarling silently. First work on what he knew he could do something about. It took an effort to smooth his face before he went in. Asmodian, as well-dressed as any lord, with falls of lace at his neck, plucked a soothing melody from his harp in one corner, leaning against the dark, severe paneling as if lounging at his leisure. The others who were sitting bobbed out of their chairs at Rand's appearance and backed down at his sharp gesture. Mylan, Torian, and Aracombe occupied carved and gilded chairs on one side of the deep red and gold carpet, each with a young Tyran lord at his back, mirroring the Kyrianen on the other side. Dobraine and Marengil had a young lord apiece behind them, too, each with the front of his head shaved and powdered like Dobraine's. A white-faced Selanda stood at Kolaver's shoulder and trembled when Rand looked at her. Schooling his face, he strode down the carpet to his own chair. That chair alone was reason to control his features. It was a new gift from Colivert and the other two, in what they imagined was the Tyran style. He must like Tyran gaudiness. He ruled Tyr, had sent them here. Carved dragons held it up, all sparkling red and gold with enamel and gilt, and great sunstones for their golden eyes. Two more made the arms, and others climbed the tall back. Countless craftsmen must have gone without sleep since his arrival to make the thing. He felt like a fool sitting on it. Asmodian's music had changed. It had a grand sound now, a triumphal march. And yet, there was an added wariness in those dark Kyrianan eyes watching him, a wariness reflected in the Tyran's. It had been there before he went outside, too. Perhaps in attempting to curry favor, they had made a mistake that was only now dawning on them. They had all tried to ignore who he was, pretend he was simply some young lord who had conquered them, who could be dealt with and manipulated. That chair, that throne, held up in front of them who and what he really was. "Are the soldiers moving on schedule, Lord Dobrain?" The harp faded away as soon as he opened his mouth, Asmodian apparently absorbed in preening it. The leathery man smiled grimly. "They are, my lord dragon." No more than that. Rand had no illusions that Dobrain liked him more than any of the others did, or that he would not try to gain advantage where he could. But Dobrain actually seemed ready to hold to the oath he had sworn. The colorful slashes down the chest of his coat were worn from a breastplate being buckled over them. Marengil shifted forward on his chair, whip slender and tall for a Kyrianan, white hair almost touching his shoulders. His forehead was not shaved, and his coat, stripes nearly to his knees, bore no visible wear.
"We need those men here, my lord dragon."
Hawk's eyes blinked at the gilded throne, focused on Rand again.
"There are many bandits at large in the land yet."
He shifted again, so he did not have to look at the Tyrans. Mylan and the other two were smiling faintly. "I have set Aiel to hunting bandits," Rand said. They did have orders to sweep up any brigands in their path, and to not go out of their way to find them. Even Aiel could not do that and move quickly. "I'm told that 3 days ago stone dogs killed nearly 200 near Morel." That was near the southernmost line claimed by Kyrian in recent years, halfway to the river Irelel. No need to let this lot know that those Aiel might be as far as the river by now. They could cover long distances faster than horses. Marengil persisted, frowning uneasily.
"There is another reason. Half of our land, west of the Alguenya, is in the hands of Andor."
He hesitated. They all knew Rand had grown up in Andor. A dozen rumors made him a son of one Andoran house or another, even a son of Morghaes herself, either cast off because he could channel or fled before he could be gentled. The slender man went on as if tiptoeing barefoot and blindfolded among daggers.
"Morghaes does not seem to be reaching for more as yet, but what she has already must be taken back. Her heralds have even proclaimed her right to the—"
He stopped abruptly. None of them knew who Rand meant the Sun Throne for. Maybe it was for Morghaes. Colivert's dark gaze had Rand on balance scales again. She had said little today. She would not until she learned why Solanda's face was so white. Suddenly Rand was tired of nobles balking, of all the maneuvering in Deus de Mar. "Andoran claims to Kyrian will be taken care of when I am ready. Those soldiers will go to Tyr. You will follow the High Lord Mylan's good example of obedience, and I'll hear no more on it." He swung toward the Tyrans.
"Your example is a good one, Mylan, isn't it? And yours, Aracom? If I ride out tomorrow, I won't find 1,000 defenders of the stone camped 10 miles south who were supposed to be on their way back to Tyr 2 days ago, will I?" or 2,000 armsmen from tyrant houses?"
Those faint smiles faded with each word. Mylan became very still, dark eyes glittering, and Aracombe's narrow face went pale, whether from anger or fear it was hard to say. Torian dabbed at his lumpy face with a silk handkerchief pulled from his sleeve. Rand ruled in Tyr and meant to rule. Kalendor, driven into the heart of the stone, proved that. That was why they had not protested against his sending Carrion and soldiers to Tyr. They thought to carve new estates, perhaps kingdoms here, far from where he ruled.
"You will not, my lord dragon," Mylan said finally. "Tomorrow I will ride with you, so you may see for yourself."
Rand did not doubt it. A rider would be dispatched south as soon as the man could arrange it, and by tomorrow those soldiers would be far on toward Tyr. It would do, for now.
"I am done, then. You may leave me."
A few starts of surprise, masked so quickly they might have been imagined, and they were rising, bowing, and curtsying, Salanda and the young lords backing away. They had expected more. An audience with the dragon reborn was always long and tortuous, as they saw it, with him firmly bending them the way he meant them to go, whether it was declaring that no tyrant could claim lands in Cairhien without marrying into a Cairhienan house, or refusing to allow the expulsion of four gators, or making laws apply to nobles that had never applied to any but commoners before. His eyes followed Salanda for a moment. She was not the first in the last 10 days, nor the 10th, or even the 20th. He had been tempted, at least at first. When he rejected Slender, Plump promptly replaced her. As tall or dark, for Cairhienan anyway, replaced short or fair. A constant search for the woman who would please him. The maidens turned back those who tried to sneak into his quarters at night, firmly, but more gently than Avienda had handled the one she caught. Avienda apparently took Elaine's ownership of him with little short of deadly seriousness. Yet her Aiel sense of humor seemed to find tormenting him very satisfying. He had seen the satisfaction on her face when he groaned and hid his face as she started undressing for the night. Thus, he could have resented her deadly seriousness if he had not quickly understood what was behind that string of pretty young women.
"My Lady Colivere."
She stopped as soon as he spoke her name, cool-eyed and calm beneath her ornate tower of dark curls. Salanda had no choice but to remain with her, though she was plainly as reluctant to stay as the others were to go. Mylan and Marengil bowed themselves out last, so intent on Colivere and trying to puzzle out why she had been called to stay that they did not realize they were side by side. Their eyes were a perfect match, dark and predatory. The dark paneled door closed.
"Salanda is a very pretty young woman," Rand said, "but some prefer the company of a more mature, more knowledgeable woman. You will sup alone with me tonight when second even is rung. I look forward to the pleasure."
He waved her away before she could say anything, if she could have. Her face did not change, but her curtsy was a trifle unsteady. Salanda looked purely amazed and infinitely relieved. Once the door had closed again, behind the two women, Rand threw back his head and laughed. A harsh, sardonic laugh. He was tired of the game of houses, so he played it without thinking. He was disgusted with himself for frightening one woman, so he frightened another. It was reason enough to laugh. Colivere stood behind that line of young women who had been flinging themselves at him. Find a bed partner for the Lord Dragon, a young woman whose string she pulled, and Colivere would have a string tied firmly to Rand. But it was some other woman she meant to bed and perhaps even marry, the dragon reborn. Now she would sweat all the hours until second even. She had to know she was pretty, if short of beautiful,
and if he rebuffed all the young women she sent, perhaps it was because he wanted one with another 15 or so years. And she would be certain she did not dare say no to the man who held Kyrian in his fist. By tonight, she should be amenable, should stop this idiocy. Avienda would very likely slit the throat of any woman she found in his bed. Besides, he had no time for all these easily frightened doves thinking to sacrifice themselves for Kyrian and Kolaver. There were too many problems to deal with, and no time.
Light, what if Kolaver decides it's worth the sacrifice?
She might. She was easily cold-blooded enough.
Then I'll have to see that it's cold with fear.
It would not be difficult. He could sense Sidene like something just beyond the edge of sight. He could feel the taint on it. Sometimes he thought that what he felt was the taint in him now, the dregs left by Sidene. He found that he was glaring at Asmodian. The man seemed to be studying him, face expressionless. The music resumed again, like water babbling over stones, soothing. So he needed soothing, did he? The door opened without a knock, admitting Moraine, Egwene, and Avienda together, the younger women's Aiel garb framing the Aes Sedai's pale blue. For anyone else, even Ruark or another chief still near the city, or yet another delegation of wise ones, a maiden would have entered to announce them. These three the maiden sent on in, even if he was taking a bath. Egwene glanced at Natale and grimaced, and the tune became lower, and for a moment intricate, perhaps a dance, before settling to what might have been the sighing of breezes. The man wore a twisted smile directed at his harp.
"I'm surprised to see you, Egwene," Rand said. He swung his leg over the arm of the chair. "What is it? 6 days you've been avoiding me? Have you brought me more good news? Has Massima sacked Amador in my name? Or have these Aes Sedai you say support me turned out to be Black Aja? You notice I don't ask who they are or where. Not even how you know. I don't ask you to divulge Aes Sedai secrets or Wise One's secrets, or whatever they are. Just give me the driblets you're willing to dole out, and let me worry whether what you don't care to tell me will stab me in the night." She looked at him calmly. "You know what you need to know, and I will not tell you what you do not need to know." That was what she had said 6 days ago. She was as much Aes Sedai as Moraine, for all one wore Aiel garb and the other pale blue silk. There was nothing calm about Avienda. She moved to stand shoulder to shoulder with Egwene, green eyes flashing, back so straight it might have been iron. He was half surprised Moraine did not join them, so they could all three glare at him. Her vow of obedience left a startling amount of room, it seemed, and the three seemed to have become close since his argument with Egwene. Not that it had been much of an argument. You could not argue very well with a woman who watched with cool eyes, never raised her voice, and after one refusal to answer, declined even to acknowledge your question again. "What do you want?" he said.
"These came for you in the last hour," Moraine said, extending two folded letters. Her voice seemed to fit Asmodian's chime-like tune.
Rand rose to take them suspiciously. "If they're for me, how did they come into your hands?" One was addressed to Randall Thor in an exact angular hand, the other to the Lord Dragon Reborn in script flowing, yet no less precise. The seals were unbroken. A second look made him blink. The two seals seemed to be the same red wax, and one bore the impression of the flame of Tarvalin, the other a tower overlaid on what he recognized as the island of Tarvalin.
"Perhaps because of where they came from," Moraine replied, "and from whom."
It was no explanation, but it was as much as he would get unless he demanded more. Even then, he would have to prod her through every step. She kept her vow, but in her own way.
"There are no poison needles in the seals, and no traps woven."
He paused with his thumb against the flame of Tarvalin. He had not thought of either, then broke it.
Another flame in red wax stood beside the signature. Elida d'Avrigny Arroyan, in a hasty scrawl above her titles. The rest was in the angular hand.
There can be no denial that you are the one prophesied, yet many will try to destroy you for what else you are. For the sake of the world, this cannot be allowed. Two nations have bent knee to you, and the savage Aiel as well. But the power of thrones is as dust beside the one power. The White Tower will shelter and protect you against those who refuse to see what must be. The White Tower will see that you live to see Tarmangaden. None else can do this. An escort of Aes Sedai will come to bring you to Tarvalen with the honor and respect you deserve. This I pledge to you.
She doesn't even ask, he said wryly.
He remembered Elida well from having met her only once. A woman hard enough to make Moraine seem a kitten. The honor and respect he deserved. He would wager that the escort of Aes Sedai just happened to number 13.
Passing Elida's letter back to Moraine, he opened the other.
The page was covered in the same hand that had addressed it.
With respect, I humbly beg to make myself known to the great Lord Dragon Reborn, whom the light blesses as savior of the world. All the world must stand in awe of you, who has conquered Kyrian in one day, as you did Tyr. Yet be wary, I beseech you, for your splendor will inspire jealousy even in those not toiled in the shadow. Even here in the White Tower are the blind who cannot see your true radiance, which will illumine us all. Yet know that some rejoice in your coming, and will delight to serve your glory. We are not those who would steal your luster for ourselves, but rather those who would kneel to bask in your brilliance. You shall save the world according to the prophecies, and the world shall be yours. To my shame, I must beg you to let no one see these words, and to destroy them when once read. I stand naked of your protection among some who would usurp your power, and I cannot know who around you is as faithful as I. I am told that Moraine Damodred may be with you. She may serve you devotedly, obeying your words as law, as I will. Yet I cannot know, for I remember her as a secretive woman, much given to plotting, as Kyrianen are. Yet even if you believe she is your creature as I beg you to keep this missive secret even from her. My life lies beneath your fingers, my Lord Dragon Reborn, and I am your servant, Alviarin Fryden.
He read it through again, blinking, then handed it to Moraine. She barely scanned the page before giving it to Egwene, who had her head over the other letter with Avienda.
Perhaps Moraine already knew what they contained.
A good thing you gave your oath, he said. The way you used to be, keeping everything back, I might have been ready to suspect you by now. A good thing you're more open now. She did not react. What do you make of it?
She must have heard about your swelled head, Egwene said softly. He did not think he had been meant to hear.
Shaking her head, she said more loudly, this doesn't sound like Avyaran at all.
It is her hand, Moraine said. What do you make of it, Rand?
I think there's a rift in the tower, whether Elida knows it or not.
I assume an Aes Sedai can't write a lie more easily than she can speak one?
He did not wait for her nod.
If Alviarin had been less flowery, I might have thought they were working together to pull me in. I can't see Elida even thinking half of what Alviarin wrote, and I can't see her having a keeper who could write it, not if she knew.
You are not going to do this thing, Avienda said. Elida's letter crumpled in her hand.
It was not a question. I am not a fool.
Sometimes you are not, she said grudgingly,
and made it worse by raising a questioning eyebrow to Egwene, who considered for a moment, then shrugged.
Do you see anything else? Moraine asked.
I see White Tower spies, he told her dryly. They know I hold the city. For at least 2 or 3 days after the battle, the Shido would have stopped anything but a pigeon going north. Even a rider who knew where to change horses, no sure thing between Kyrian and Tarvalin, could not have reached the tower in time for these letters to come back today. Moraine smiled.
You learn quickly. You will do well.
For a moment, she almost looked fond.
What will you do about it?
Nothing, except make sure that Elida's escort doesn't get within a mile of me. 13 of the weakest Aes Sedai could overwhelm him linked, and he did not think Elida would send her weakest. That, and be aware that the tower knows what I do the day after I do it. Nothing more until I know more. Could Alviarin be one of your mysterious friends, Egwene? She hesitated, and he suddenly wondered whether she had told Moraine any more than she had him. Was it Aes Sedai secrets she kept, or wise ones? At last she said simply,
I do not know.
A rap came at the door, and Somara put her flaxen head into the room.
Matrim Cothin has come, Karakarn. He says that you sent for him.
4 hours ago, as soon as he had learned Matt was back in the city. What would the excuse be this time? It was time to be done with excuses. Stay, he told the women. Wise ones made Matt almost as uneasy as Aes Sedai did. These three would put him off balance. He did not give a second thought to using them. He was going to use Matt, too. Send him in, Samara. Matt strolled into the room, grinning, as if it was a common room. His green coat hung open, and his shirt was half unlaced, exposing the silver fox head dangling on his sweaty chest. But the dark silk scarf was draped around his neck to hide his hanging scar in spite of the heat.
Sorry I took too long. There were some Kyrianen who thought they knew how to play cards. Doesn't he know anything livelier?
He asked, jerking his head toward Osmodian.
I hear, Rand said, that every young man who can pick up a sword wants to join the band of the Red Hand. Talmanis and Elysian are having to turn them away in droves, and Dered has doubled the number of his footmen.
Matt paused in lowering himself into the chair Aracombe had used.
It's true. A fine lot of young fellows wanting to be heroes.
The Band of the Red Hand, Moraine murmured. Shen An Kalhar. A legendary group of heroes indeed, though the men in it must have changed many times in a war that lasted well over 300 years. It is said they were the last to fall to the Trollocs, guarding Aemon himself when Manetherin died. Legend says a spring rose where they fell, to mark their passing. But I rather think the spring was already there.
I wouldn't know about that.
Matt touched the foxhead medallion, and his voice picked up strength.
Some fool got the name from somewhere, and they all started using it.
Moraine glanced at the medallion dismissively. The small blue stone hanging on her forehead seemed to catch the light and glow, though the angles were wrong.
You are very brave, it seems, Matt.
It was flatly said, and the silence that followed stiffened his face.
Very brave, she said finally, to lead Shen An Kalhar across the Alguenya and south against the Andorans. Even braver than that, for there are rumors that you went alone to scout the way, and Talmanis and Elysion had to ride hard to catch up to you.
Egwene sniffed loudly in the background.
Hardly wise for a young lord leading his men.
Matt's lip curled.
I'm no lord. I've more respect for myself than that.
But very brave, Moraine said, as if he had not spoken. Andoran supply wagons burned, outposts destroyed, and 3 battles. 3 battles and 3 victories, with small loss to your own men, though outnumbered.
As she fingered a rip in the shoulder of his coat, he sank back as far as the chair would allow.
"Are you drawn to the thick of battles, or are they drawn to you? I'm almost surprised you came back. To hear the stories, you might have driven the Andorans back across the Aranin had you stayed."
"Do you think this is funny?" Matt snarled. "If you have something to say, say it. You can play the cat all you want, but I'm no mouse."
For an instant, his eyes flickered toward Egwene and Avienda, watching with folded arms, and he fingered the silver fox head again. He had to be wondering. It had stopped one woman's channeling from touching him. Would it stop three? Rand only watched. Watched his friend being softened for what he meant to do to him. "Is there anything left to me but necessity?" It was a quick thought, there and gone. He would do what he must. The Aes Sedai's voice gained a rhyme of crystal frost as she spoke, almost in an echo.
"We all do as we must, as the pattern decrees. For some there is less freedom than for others. It does not matter whether we choose or are chosen. What must be, must be."
Matt did not look softened at all. Wary, yes, and certainly angry, but not softened. He could have been a tomcat backed into a corner by three hounds. A tomcat who meant to go down hard. He seemed to have forgotten anyone was in the room except for himself and the three women.
"You always have to push a man where you want him, don't you? Kick him there if he won't go led by the nose. Blood and bloody ashes. Don't glare at me, Egwene. I'll speak the way I want. Burn me. All it needs is for Nynaeve to be here yanking your braid out of her head, and Elaine staring down her nose. Well, I'm glad she isn't to hear the news. But even if you had Nynaeve, I'd not be shoved..."
"What news?" Rand said sharply.
"News Elaine shouldn't hear?"
Matt looked up at Moraine.
"You mean there's something you haven't ferreted out?"
"What news, Matt?" Rand demanded.
"Morghese is dead."
Egwene gasped, clasping both hands to her mouth below eyes like huge circles. Moraine whispered something that might have been a prayer. Asmodean's fingers never faltered on the harp. Rand felt as if his belly had been ripped out.
"Elaine, forgive me."
And a faint echo altered.
"Ilyena, forgive me."
"Are you certain?"
"As certain as I can be without seeing the body. It seems Gabriel has been named King of Andor. And Kyrian, too, for that matter. Supposedly, Morghese did it. Something about the times needing a strong man's hand or some such, as if anybody could have a stronger than Morghese herself. Only those Andorans down south have heard rumors that she hasn't been seen in weeks. More than rumors. You tell me what it adds up to. Andor's never had a king, but now it has one, and the queen's vanished. Gabriel's the one wanted Elaine killed. I tried to tell her that, but you know how she always knows more than a mud-footed farmer. I don't think he'd balk a second at slitting a queen's throat."
Rand discovered that he was sitting in one of the chairs across from Matt, though he did not remember moving. Avienda laid a hand on his shoulder. Concern tightened her eyes.
"I'm all right," he said roughly. "There's no need to send for Somara."
Her face reddened, but he hardly noticed. Elaine would never be able to forgive him. He had known that Ravin, Gabriel, held Morghese prisoner, but he had ignored it because the Forsaken might expect him to help her. He had gone his own way to do what they did not expect, and ended chasing Culloden instead of doing what he planned. He had known and concentrated his attention on Samael, because the man taunted him. Morghese could wait while he smashed Samael's trap, and Samael with it. And so Morghese was dead. Elaine's mother was dead. Elaine would curse him to her deathbed.
"I'll tell you one thing," Matt was going on. "There are a lot of queen's men down there. They are not so sure about fighting for a king. You find Elaine, half of them will flock to you to put her on the..."
Shut up! Rand barked.
He quivered so hard with fury that Egwene stepped back, and even Moraine eyed him carefully. Avienda's hand tightened on his shoulder, but he shook it off as he stood. Morgay's dead because he had done nothing. His own hand had been on the knife as surely as Ravin's.
Elaine.
She will be avenged. Ravin, Matt. Not Gabriel. Ravin. I'll lay him by the heels if I never do another thing.
Oh, blood and bloody ashes, Matt groaned. This is madness.
Egwene flinched as if realizing what she had said, but she kept that firm, calm voice.
You have your hands full with Kyrian yet, not to mention the Shadow to the north, and whatever it is you're planning in Tyr. Do you mean to start another war, with two on your plate already and a ruined land besides?
Not a war. Me. I can be in Camelin in an hour. A raid, right, Matt? A raid, not a war. I'll rip Ravin's heart out.
His voice was a hammer. He felt as if acid filled his veins.
I could wish I had Elida's 13 sisters to take with me to smother him and bring him to justice. Tried and hung for murder. That would be justice. But he'll just have to die however I can kill him.
Tomorrow,
Moraine said softly. Rand glared at her. But she was right. Tomorrow would be better. A night to let his rage cool. He needed to be cold when he faced Ravin. Now he wanted to seize Cydene and lay about him destroying. Asmodian's music had changed again to a tune that street musicians in the city had played during the Civil War. You could still hear it sometimes when a Kyrian noble passed. The fool who thought he was king.
Get out, Natale! Get out!
Asmodian straightened smoothly, bowing, but his face could have done for snow, and he crossed the room quickly as if uncertain what one second more might bring. He always pushed, but perhaps this time he had pushed too far. As he opened the door, Rand spoke again.
I will see you tonight, or I will see you dead.
Asmodian's bow was not so graceful this time.
As my Lord Dragon commands, he said hoarsely,
and hurriedly pulled the door shut with him on the other side. The three women looked at Rand, expressionless, not blinking.
The rest of you go, too. Matt practically bounded toward the door. Not you. I have things to say to you yet.
Matt stopped short, sighing loudly and fiddling with his medallion. He was the only one who had moved.
You do not have 13 Aes Sedai, Avienda said. But you have 2, and myself. I may not know as much as Moraine Sedai, but I am as strong as Egwene, and I am no stranger to the dance.
She met the dance of spears, what the Aiel called battle.
Ravin is mine, he told her quietly.
Maybe Elaine could forgive him a little if he at least avenged her mother. Probably not, but maybe he could forgive himself. A little. He forced his hands to stay at his sides, to not make fists.
Will you draw a line on the ground for him to step over? Egwene asked. Put a chip on your shoulder? Have you considered that Ravin might not be alone if he calls himself King of Andor now? Much good it will do when you appear if one of his guards puts an arrow through your heart.
He could remember wishing she would not shout at him, but it had been so much easier then.
Do you think I meant to go alone?
He had. He had never thought of anyone to guard his back, though he could hear a small whisper.
He likes to come from behind or at your flanks.
He could hardly think clearly at all. His anger seemed to have a life of its own, stoking the fires that kept it boiling.
But not you. This is dangerous. Moraine can come if she wishes.
Egwene and Avienda did not look at one another before stepping forward, but they moved as one, not stopping until they were so close even Avienda had to tilt her head back to look up at him.
Moraine can come if she wishes, Egwene said. If her voice was smooth ice, Avienda's was molten stone.
But it is too dangerous for us.
Have you become my father? Is your name Bran Alvear?
If you have 3 spears, do you put 2 aside because they are newer made?
I do not want to risk you, he said stiffly.
Egwene arched her eyebrows.
Oh!
That was all.
I am not gashing to you.
Avienda bared her teeth.
You will never choose what risks I take, Randall Thor. Never. Know it now.
He could... what? Wrap them in Sidene and leave them? He still could not shield them. So they might well snare him in return. A fine mess, all because they wanted to be stubborn.
You have thought of guards, Moraine said. But what if who is with Ravin is Simarag, or Grendel, or Lanfear? These 2 might overwhelm one such. But could you face her and Ravin together alone?
There had been something in her voice when she said Lanfear's name. Was she afraid that if Lanfear was there, he might finally join her? What would he do if she was there? What could he do?
They can come, he said through clenched teeth. Now will you go?
As you command, Moraine said.
But they were in no hurry about it. Avienda and Egwene took ostentatious care in rearranging their shawls before they started for the door. Lords and ladies might dart at his word, but never them.
You did not try to talk me out of it, he said abruptly.
He meant it for Moraine, but Egwene spoke first, though to Avienda and with a smile.
Stopping a man from what he wants to do is like taking a sweet from a child. Sometimes you have to do it. But sometimes it just isn't worth the trouble.
Avienda nodded.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, was Moraine's reply.
She stood in the doorway looking more Aes Sedai than he ever remembered her, ageless, with dark eyes that seemed ready to swallow him. Slight and slender, yet so regal, she could have commanded a roomful of queens if she could not channel a spark. That blue stone on her forehead was catching the light again.
You will do well, Rand.
He stared at the door long after it closed behind them. It was a scuff of boots that recalled him to Matt's presence. Matt was trying to slide toward the door, moving slowly so as not to be seen.
I need to talk to you, Matt.
Matt grimaced, touching the fox head like a talisman. He spun to face Rand.
If you think I'm going to put my head on the block just because those fool women did, you can forget it now. I'm no bloody hero, and I don't want to be one. Morgaze was a pretty woman. I even liked her, as much as you can like a queen. But Ravin is Ravin, burn you, and I...
Shut up and listen.
You have to stop running.
Burn me if I will. This is no game I chose, and I won't...
I said, shut up.
Matt drove the fox head against Matt's chest with a hard finger.
I know where you got this. I was there, remember? I cut the rope you were hanging from. I don't know exactly what got shoved into your head, but whatever it is, I need it. The clan chiefs know war, but somehow you know it too. And maybe better. I need that. So this is what you're going to do. You and the Band of the Red Hand.
Be careful tomorrow, Moraine said. Egwene paused at the door to her room. Of course we'll be careful. Her stomach was turning backflips, but she kept her voice steady. We know how dangerous facing one of the Forsaken will be. By Avienda's expression, they might have been talking about what was for supper, but then she was never afraid of anything. Do you now? Moraine murmured. Be very careful anyway, whether you think one of the Forsaken is near or not. Rand will need both of you in the days to come. You handle his temper well, though I may say your methods are unusual. He will need people who cannot be driven away or quelled by his rages, who will tell him what he must hear instead of what they think he wants to. You do that, Moiraine, Egwene told her. Of course, but he will still need you. Rest well. Tomorrow will be difficult for us all. She glided away down the corridor, passing from dimness to pool of lamplight to dimness. Night was already coming to these shadowed halls, and oil was in short supply. Will you stay with me a while, Avienda? Egwene asked. I feel more like talking than eating. I must tell Amys what I have promised to do tomorrow, and I must be in Randall Thor's sleeping chamber when he comes. Elaine can never complain that you haven't watched Rand closely for her. Did you really drag the Lady Berowyn down the hall by her hair? Avienda's cheeks colored faintly. Do you think these Aes Sedai in Salidar will help him? Be careful of that name, Avienda. Rand cannot be allowed to find them without preparation. The way he was now, they would be more likely to gentle him, or at least send 13 sisters of their own, than help him. She would have to stand between them in Tel Aran Riod, she and Nynaeve and Elaine, and hope those Aes Sedai had committed themselves too far to back out before they discovered how near the brink he was. I will be careful. Rest well. And eat well tonight. In the morning eat nothing. It is not good to dance the spears with a full stomach. Egwene watched her stride away before pressing her hands to her stomach. She did not think she would eat tonight or in the morning. Ravine, and maybe Lanfear, or one of the others. Nynaeve had faced Mogadine and won, but Nynaeve was stronger than she or Avienda when she could channel at all. There might not be another. Rand said the Forsaken did not trust one another. She could almost wish he was wrong, or at least that he was not so certain. It was frightening when she thought she saw another man looking through his eyes, heard another man's words come out of his mouth. It should not be so. Everyone was reborn as the wheel turned, but everyone was not the dragon reborn. Moiraine would not talk of it. What would Rand do if Lanfear was there? Lanfear had loved Luz Theron Telamon, but what had the dragon felt for her? How much of Rand was still Rand? You will work yourself into a tizzy this way, she said firmly. You're not a child. Act like a woman. When a serving woman brought her supper of snap beans and potatoes and fresh-baked bread, she made herself eat. It tasted like ashes.
Matt strode through the dimly lit corridors of the palace and flung open the door of the rooms that had been set aside for the young hero of the battle against the Shido. Not that he had spent much time there, hardly any. Servants had lit two of the stand lamps. Hero. He was no hero. What did a hero get? An Aes Sedai patting you on the head before she sent you out like a hound to do it again? A noblewoman condescending to favor you with a kiss, or laying a flower on your grave. He stalked back and forth in his anteroom, for once not pricing the flowered Ilioner carpet, or the chairs and chests and tables gilded and inlaid with ivory. The stormy meeting with Rand had gone on till the sun set, him dodging, refusing, Rand following as doggedly as Hawkwing after the rout at Cole Pass. What was he to do? If he rode out again, Talmanis and Elysion would surely follow with as many men as they could put in the saddle, expecting him to find another battle. And he probably would. That was what really put a chill on it. Much as he hated to admit it, the Aes Sedai was right. He was drawn to battle, or it to him. Nobody could have tried harder to avoid one on the other side of the Alguenia. Even Talmanis had commented on it. Until the second time his careful creeping away from one lot of Andorans took them where there was no choice but to fight another. And every time he could feel the dice rolling in his head. It was almost like a warning that a fight was just over the next hill now. There was always a ship, or might be, down at the docks beside the grain barges. Hard to find yourself in a battle on a ship in the middle of a river, except the Andorans held one bank of the Alguenia for half its length or more below the city. The way his luck was running, the ship would run aground in the west bank with half the Andoran army camped there. That left doing what Rand wanted. He could just see it.
Good morrow, High Lord Wyroman, and all you other High Lords and ladies. I'm a gambler, a farm boy, and I'm here to take command of your bloody army. The bloody Lord Dragon Reborn will be with us as soon as he flaming takes care of one bloody little matter.
Snatching his black-hafted spear from the corner, he hurled it the length of the room. It struck a wall hanging, a hunting scene, and the stone wall behind, with a loud clang, then dropped to the floor, leaving the hunters neatly sliced in two. Swearing, he hurried to pick it up. The 2-foot sword blade was not chipped or marred. Of course not. Aes Sedai work. He fingered the ravens on the blade.
Will I ever be free of Aes Sedai work?
What was that? Melindra asked from the door. He eyed her as he propped the spear against the wall, and for a change it was not spun gold hair or clear blue eyes or a firm body that he thought of. It seemed that every Aiel went to the river sooner or later to stare silently at so much water in one place, but Melindra went every day, just about.
Has Kadir found ships yet?
Kadir would not be going to Tar Valon on grain barges.
The peddler's wagons are still there. I do not know about ships.
She pronounced the unfamiliar word awkwardly.
Why do you wish to know?
I'm going away for a while. For Rand, he added hastily. Her face was too still.
I'd take you with me if I could, but you wouldn't want to leave the maidens.
A ship or his own horse? And to where? That was the question. He could reach Tyr quicker on a fast river ship than on Pip's. If he was fool enough to make that choice. If he had any choice. Melindra's mouth tightened briefly. To his surprise, it was not over his leaving her.
So you slip back into Randalthor's shadow. You have gained much honor of your own, among the Aiel as well as the Wetlanders. Your honor, not honor reflected from the Karakarn.
He can keep his honor and take it to Camelin or the Pit of Doom for all I care. Don't you worry, I'll find plenty of honor. I'll write you all about it. From Tyr.
Tyr?
He would never escape Rand or Aes Sedai if he made that choice.
He is going to Camelin.
Matt suppressed a wince. He was not supposed to say anything about that. Whatever he decided about the rest, he could do that much.
Just a name pulled from my pocket. Because of the Andorans down south, I suppose. I wouldn't know where he's...
He had no warning. One instant she was just standing there. The next her foot was in his middle, driving out breath, doubling him over. Eyes bulging, he fought to keep his feet, to straighten, to think. Why? She spun like a dancer, backwards, and her other foot against the side of his head drove him staggering. Without a pause, she leaped straight up, kicking out, her soft boot sole taking him hard flush in the face. When his eyes cleared enough to see, he was on his back, halfway across the room from her. He could feel blood on his face. His head seemed stuffed with wool, and the room seemed to rock. That was when he saw her take a knife from her pouch, slim blade not much longer than her hand, gleaming in the lamplight. Winding the shufa around her head in a quick motion, she raised the black veil across her face. Groggily, he moved by instinct without thinking. The blade came out of his sleeve, left his hand as if floating through jelly. Only then did he realize what he had done and stretch out desperately, trying to snatch it back. The hilt bloomed between her breasts. She sagged to her knees, fell back. Matt pushed himself up, wavering on hands and knees. He could not have stood if his life hung on it. But he crawled to her, muttering wildly,
"Why? Why?"
He jerked her veil aside, and those clear blue eyes focused on him. She even smiled. He did not look at the knife hilt. His knife hilt. He knew where the heart was in a body.
"Why, Melindra? I always liked your pretty eyes,"
she breathed, so faint he had to strain to hear.
"Why?"
Some oaths are more important than others, Matt Cawthon.
The slim-bladed knife came up swiftly, all her remaining strength behind it, the point driving the dangling fox head against his chest. The silver medallion should not have stopped a blade, but the angle was just that much wrong, and some hidden flaw in the steel snapped the blade off right at the hilt, just as he caught her hand.
"You have the great lord's own luck."
"Why?" he demanded. "Burn you, why?"
He knew there would be no answer. Her mouth remained open, as though she might say something more, but her eyes were already beginning to glaze. He started to pull the veil back up, to cover her face and staring eyes, then let his hand fall. He had killed men and Trollocs, but never a woman. Never a woman until now. Women were glad when he came into their lives. It was not boasting. Women smiled for him. Even when he left them, they smiled as if they would welcome him back. That was all he ever really wanted from women. A smile, a dance, a kiss, and to be remembered fondly. He realized his thoughts were babbling. Jerking the bladeless hilt from Melindra's hand, it was gold-mounted jade inlaid with golden bees, he hurled it into the marble fireplace, hoping it shattered. He wanted to cry, to howl.
"I don't kill women. I kiss them. I don't..."
He had to think clearly. Why? Not because he was leaving, surely. She had hardly reacted to that. Besides, she thought he was chasing off after honor. She had always approved of that. Something she had said tugged at him and then came back with a chill. The great lord's own luck. He had heard it differently many times. The Dark One's own luck. A dark friend. A question or certainty? He wished the thought made what he had done easier in his mind. He was going to carry her face to his grave. Tyr. He had as much as told her he was going to Tyr. The dagger. Golden bees in jade. He would wager there were nine without looking. Nine golden bees on a field of green, the sign of Ilion, where Samael ruled. Could Samael be afraid of him? Could Samael even know? It was only a few hours since Rand had asked Matt, told him, and he was not sure himself what he was going to do. Maybe Samael would not take the chance? Right. One of the Forsaken, afraid of a gambler, however stuffed with other men's battle knowledge his head might be. That was ridiculous. It all came down to this. He could believe that Melindra had not been a dark friend, that she had decided to kill him on a whim, that there was no connection between a jade hilt inlaid with golden bees and his maybe going to Tyr to lead an army against Ilion. He could, if he was a bull-goose fool... Better to err toward caution, he always said. One of the Forsaken had noticed him. He certainly was not standing in Rand's shadow now. Sliding across the floor, he sat with his chin on his knees and his back against the door, staring at Melindra's face, trying to decide what to do. When a servant knocked with his supper, he shouted for her to go away. Food was the last thing he wanted. What was he going to do? He wished he did not feel the dice spinning in his head.